Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who met his wife while training for the 400 meters in Seattle and is eating gluten-free whilst lusting after bread, Dave Denniston.
Hello, my friends. This is Dave Denniston. Hope you had an awesome holiday season. We're back with a brand new podcast episode. And I have a question for you. Did you notice something different? We have a new couple of new intros that I'm trying out. You should have noticed a quickie little episode earlier this month with two of these intros, and I would love to know from you which of the two introductions do you love the best. So I'm going to take a poll from the audience. So whatever you guys like better is the one that I'm going to go with. So make sure to email me dave@daviddenniston.com or dave@drfreedompodcast.com. So DOCTOR freedompodcast.com. And let me know, do you like the gal with the English accent or the guy with the deep voice? Which of those two do you like better? Let me know, and I will go for the rest of the year with the winner of that little contest we're doing. Secondly, also, we now have new podcast artwork. So I had the audience kind of vote on that, went to a group of doctors, asked them what they thought, and they helped me pick the new podcast artwork. So make sure to check that out if you haven't seen that yet. And in this new year, my friends, we're going to be doing some new stuff, trying some new things. I'm bringing on some other special guests that I'm so excited about. We're going to be trying to do some more fireside chats. And in the conversation we have today, we are joined by Dr. Peter Kim. He is someone that's an anesthesiologist in Los Angeles, and he started this side hustle. You're going to learn about how his relationship with his dad led to his passion for medicine. But at the same time, he had this gap financially that his dad and parents didn't really fulfill. And so you're going to discover about how he learned this revolutionary way of managing money that he ended up learning from a different relative. And my friends, in the lesson in the podcast today, you're going to learn the lessons that Pete learned growing up and how debt impacted his future. You're going to talk about and learn the number of credit cards he had and why he fell into that trap. You're going to discover how he hustled and got all of his debt paid off within a year. And finally, you're going to learn about why my wife and I differ about the way that we grew up with money. So I know you're going to love it. Here is the podcast with Dr. Peter Kim.
My name is Dave Denniston, your host, and welcome back to the latest episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. And welcome back, my friends, to our monthly fireside chat with a physician to get to know their journey, their joys, and their struggles with finances and outside of finances. This show, it's not always about actionable content, but today is a chance for you to see behind the curtains, to walk in another doctor's shoes, to experience their lives. Now, our next guest, he is not only a physician, he has created a side hustle. And this is focused on concierge real estate for physicians called Curbside Real Estate. Now, a little bit of a bio on him. He is a practicing full-time anesthesiologist. He lives in beautiful, sunny Southern California, my birth home, go Lakers. And as I mentioned a few seconds ago, he has a passion for real estate that stemmed from his own frustrations, his own failures. And so I know he has a ton of wisdom, a great amount of mentorship to share with us. With no further ado, please help me welcome Dr. Peter Kim. Welcome, Pete.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dave. I've been listening to the show for a while, so it's really an honor to be here.
Oh, man, no, it's an honor to have you. It's so fun getting to talk with so many different kinds of people, and I think what's so cool about what you're doing is you have this whole side hustle, and I want to get into that here in a little bit. But as you know, this podcast, it's about empowering physicians with knowledge of how they can slash their debt and slash their taxes and live a liberated lifestyle. But before I get into the content, I just love to know about my guests and their influences and what's brought them up. So can you tell us a little bit about where you grew up and what your childhood was like?
Sure. I mean, I live in Southern California now, but I grew up most of my life on the East Coast. I was born and raised in Baltimore, Maryland. I did all of my schooling there, and I really never left the, it's like a 20-mile radius there where I never moved outside of
Wow.
my whole life. I had a great childhood. I mean, my father was a surgeon, or he is a surgeon, hasn't retired yet. I was born when he was in residency. So I do remember moving around quite a bit. I mean, we lived in some smaller apartments. We lived in a different state for a little while. He did a fellowship. We moved to another state and ended up in Maryland. And I do remember moving into, like I said, every couple of years as he kind of moved into different places in his career. We moved into a little slightly nicer neighborhood, slightly nicer homes. And the last one we had settled at, we lived there from, when I was in middle school through high school, and it was a great life. I mean, I always lived in neighborhoods with a lot of young kids, and we just had a great time, and it was very free. And I just hope, I have some children as well, and I hope my children can live a similar type of life. So
So
really not
tell me
much to complain about.
more about that. So your dad was a surgeon. Was that something where medicine, you were in there with him at the hospital, saw him at the hospital, or what was that like growing up as a child?
Yeah, I mean, I remember going to the hospital quite a bit. I mean, he worked in a, it's a smaller, it's not a tiny, but a smaller community hospital where all the doctors know each other. I mean, even all the nurses know the families of the doctors. And I remember going to the hospital quite a bit, spending time there, eating in the cafeteria, kind of playing around in the cafeteria in the hospital, a little children's area. I remember playing in that whole area as a kid. So honestly, it was like kind of a playground to me when I was growing up.
Wow, that's fun. I was a sponsor at the Minnesota Medical Association conference here, and they had Z-Dog come on. And I was just thinking of him and his story, because he talked about his dad also being in medicine, and there was this pressure kind of on him to be a doc. Did you feel that at all for yourself and growing up?
I actually have several doctors in my family. I mean, my mom's side, I was fortunate on my mom's side to have, I mean, her father was a physician as well. So it's just kind of the only thing I knew growing up. And I don't think there was any particular, I don't remember my parents or my grandfather telling me, look, you have to be a doctor, or this is the best thing, or this is what you have to do. It's just kind of the life I grew up in. And you try to model yourself after people you look up to. And for me, that was my father, that was my grandfather, and that sort of thing. And so I just, being a doctor was just part of it. And so I always saw myself growing up just to be like them. And that's just, following their footsteps into medicine.
So were you, 6 years old in the hospital with the stethoscope around your neck, and you're like, I know I'm going to be a doc? Or what was that journey like when you finally decided that you did want to be in medicine?
Yeah, I think if anybody, I mean, again, as far as I can recall, anytime anybody asked me what I'm going to be when I'm going to grow up, when I grow up, I always just assumed I was going to be a doctor. I mean, I still remember, like, on my walls growing up, you have your posters of, like, I have my Baltimore Orioles poster, Cal Ripken poster there. And on the other wall, and I still remember this, I had a poster of the GI tract. And that's why my dad put that up. He's a colorectal surgeon. So he just had this big poster up on my wall of the GI tract. I don't know if he was trying to influence me or whatever, but I always had that on my wall, and I kept that growing up. And it just, that's something that brings back fond memories for me. And that's, I had stethoscopes around the, I mean, around the house and that sort of thing. So it was just very normal to me growing up.
Huh. So you decided to do it just from super early age. You go to undergrad. Did you still know that you wanted to be a doc at that particular point?
Yeah, I kind of chose my undergrad, expecting to be a physician. I mean, I went to Johns Hopkins University, and that was right down the street from my high school, and they're obviously well known for their med program, right? I mean, their pre-med and their medical school. And I went there with the intention of, like, getting a good education, and hopefully that would be a good pathway for me to ultimately end up in med school. And I ended up going to University of Maryland there for med school, which was right down the street as well. And so, I mean, everything worked out at the end of the day. I ultimately kind of had that path in my mind the whole time. I mean, there were a few times during undergrad, I saw a few of my friends, and they were going to some they were going into business, and they were some people wanted to do become entrepreneurs, and they would talk about some of the businesses that they wanted to start. And that kind of always, I don't know, I always had a little bit of that spirit in me. And so there were times where I kind of wavered slightly thinking about it. But at the end of the day, I kind of always, I had never deviated too much from the path.
Interesting. Wow, and so close to home. So I mean, you were staying around your folks, and medical school wasn't too far away. And then what happened with residency then? Where'd you end up doing residency?
Well, I mean, I met my wife in medical school. We are at different med schools, but we are in the same city. And she's from LA, so she kind of threw a wrench in the plans when I met her. You know, as it started to get a little bit serious, you know, she started to put it out there that, hey, maybe, would you consider kind of going back out to the West Coast to at least try for residency? You know, and if you don't like it, then, you know, I'm open to, you know, she said she's open to kind of possibly settling out east. And she said, why don't we just try it for residency? And, of course, my folks weren't necessarily too thrilled with that idea, you know. Mm. I guess I'm like a mama's boy of sorts, so I stayed really close to home. But I said, hey, let's give it a shot. And luckily we both matched in LA, so that worked out perfect. And so we gave it a shot and I ended up out here for residency. And, you know, I guess she already kind of knew in the back of her mind, the moment I ended up out here, there's no way I was going back. So, within a couple months I was sold.
Yeah, no doubt, right? I mean, beaches and surfing and hanging out, and obviously there's some great medicine there at a lot of the universities. Now, I know that when it comes to money, obviously your family had some sort of wealth in terms of your dad being a doc during the golden age of medicine. What were some of your experiences with money at this particular point in your journey where now you're in L.A. and you're a resident?
Well, I mean, it's funny because growing up, we never talked about money. It was really not something we talked about in our family. I mean, it's just, when they talked about what kind of career or life I would have, they'd always talk about the whole noble sense of medicine and that great feeling of being a physician and providing a great service to the community and feeling good about what you do in life. But the money aspect was really never talked about. And I think they were doing that really just to shield me from the whole thing. I mean, they didn't want me to kind of have that burden of, thinking about money growing up. And so they really didn't talk about it quite a bit. And so, honestly, it was really never something that was in my mind, growing up. I took some student loans here and there, and obviously I had to consider that, but those are things you can defer off to the future. So, yes. It really wasn't until residency, maybe late med school, but you know, somewhere in the middle of residency where I actually started to think about it. Oh man, I have to figure out what I'm going to be doing in terms of my finances. What do physicians make? How do they think about retirement? About all these things. It didn't pop up until residency at all for me.
Well, did you start leaning on your dad at this point, kind of asking him advice? Or, you know, what was that like? You know, did you figure out yourself? What was that path like to thinking about money and figuring out money then?
Yeah, I mean, I did start asking him a little bit about it. Started asking him about whether, I mean, we started, do you have a financial advisor? I started asking him, did you incorporate yourself? How are you saving for retirement in basics? I didn't really get into too much of the technical aspects of it. And it's kind of funny. I don't know. It's a little bit uncomfortable for me to ask my father about money. It's never been kind of a part of our relationship. And so, I don't know. I just never really, it was a little bit hard to have that discussion. And I didn't feel like I got great details. But it's funny because at this point I was married in residency. I married my wife, and her father was an anesthesiologist, actually, as well. And he started to kind of talk about finances with me. I think he was trying to make sure that I took care of his daughter, you know. And so he would give me – I mean, he would talk about finances quite a bit. And he – I mean, almost he would – it wouldn't be like to criticize, but, you know, he saw some of the things I was spending my money on and doing this. And so he tried to give me his own fatherly advice and say, look Peter, you know, you've got the most important thing you can do is to save money and, you know, be careful how you spend your money and that sort of thing. And so he started telling me about what he did for retirement. And again, he ended up doing a lot of real estate. And so he started kind of letting me know what his kind of whole, you know, plan was all along and ultimately how it's led him up to the point he is today. And so he was a big influence in my life in terms of finances as well. So I'm really, I mean, honestly, I was really lucky to have him.
You know, it's so interesting because I think of the Asian culture and the stereotype of, you know, the Asian grandma hoarding money, right? You know, like under the mattress. So that sounds like that stereotype didn't really kind of play into your world until your father-in-law relationship
Yeah,
started.
it's kind of funny. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think my father, I mean, he and I are pretty similar. I mean, we like even on the phone, we sound the same. We kind of have the same kind of personality. He has a little bit more of a, you know, he's so focused on his surgeon kind of career and surgeon life and trying to be the best surgeon he can be. And obviously, he is very, he's well known in the community. He's very involved in his church and that sort of thing. So I think he was very, very focused on those things. And the financial part, you know, as long as he could, I mean, he did his best to, you know, provide for his children, and he did an amazing job for us. You know, obviously we had everything we needed or wanted growing up, and I think he was just so focused on that. And I don't know, he just never really talked about the financial parts. And but unfortunately, I mean, like I said, he's still working today, and you know, I see where he is with his retirement, and I think he's, I mean, he's close to where he needs to be, but honestly, he's not quite where he should be, in my opinion, you know? And whereas I see my father-in-law in a kind of different situation, and it's not to criticize my father or say, you know, one's better than another. I think they just chose different priority, you know, they had different priorities in life. But so
Absolutely.
what I'm trying to do is trying to blend the best of both worlds, right? And luckily I have both of those influences in my life.
So
So.
what does that look like for you then, Pete? You know, is it what's important to you as you compare these two role models, right? You have one that was super successful in real estate from what it sounds like and was focused on saving and wealth, and you have your dad who is incredibly hardworking, good guy, loves medicine, passionate about his job. What does that look like for you in terms of what you want to do and where you want to go?
Yeah, so again, I'm trying to, I mean, again, I try to learn from both their successes and fail, and I don't know about failures, but mistakes. And so, I mean, it's nice for me to have that, to have both sides of that, and they're both physicians. So, yeah, I could see how choices early on in your career can ultimately end up, you know, where that might put you at the end of your career. So, what I've tried to do is from my father-in-law, I really, really learned from him and been influenced. I guess the influence I've got from him is to really, really save your money and put it into some sort of income-producing assets, and that's always been a focus for me. And that's from him. From my father, you know, I've really taken the side of like, you know, taking medicine very seriously and understanding how important it is to our lives and the noble part of the profession and how we have to hustle and work hard to kind of get everything in life. I mean, again, his background is, you know, he grew up very poor. So, poor, lower middle class, you know, the first of his, you know, family to end up in going to college and university. And so he, you know, he scraped and clawed to ultimately get where he, you know, he got. And he tells me these amazing stories about how, you know, in his village, only, there's only, at that time, there were really only, I think, three universities out there in Korea, three major ones, and one kid from his, you know, town gets to go to like each of those three. And, you know, at that time, you know, medicine, of course, was the highest, you know, the highest, you know, the achievement that anybody could have. So really only like three kids in his whole village get to go to the major university. So he was, I mean, he hustled and he clawed and scraped to get where he was. And, you know, he moved from there to, you know, America. It's an amazing story. And so I think he tried to, you know, these, as an immigrant, he tried to shield, you know, he wants the best life for me. And again, he tried to shield me from all that. So, yeah, so money for me and him, I haven't, not that I haven't learned anything from him, but for me, I try to provide that type of same life for my children while being smart on the backside and investing and preparing for my future as well. So luckily, I've gotten both sides to really because both sides to really learn from.
That's awesome. Well, I think there's so many good lessons in that. And I firmly believe money isn't everything. It's a tool, right? I mean, it just depends
Right.
on how you want to use that tool. But as you know, for me, I love talking about figuring out debt. And so many of our colleagues, so many of our friends that are in the medical profession are struggling with debt. So you did mention that you did have some student loans. So tell us, Pete, a little bit about how's debt been part of your journey with medicine?
Well, one of the downsides for me growing up and the fact that I didn't learn about finances and money is that I didn't really learn about debt and how to again, how debt impacts you and impacts your future life. And so for me in college, I mean, I don't know if it's still the same case, but there are credit card companies all over college campuses just with, you know, at tables and desks, you know, trying to give you free stuff to sign up for credit cards. I don't know if it's the same right now, but I mean, for me, you know, if there's anything free, I sign up for everything. I mean, it was like a free, you know, $10 gift card for coffee. I'd say, oh, yeah, I'll sign up for the credit card. Yeah, what's the big deal, you know? Free free T-shirt and stress ball, you know, that sort of thing. So I signed up for everything under the sun that I could just to get the free stuff. And, again, I didn't really understand how – I knew nothing about credit scores. I knew nothing about, again, exactly interest rates. Honestly, I had zero sense when it came to those things. So I remember I had at one point – I almost collected them, you know. They would – you know, you could put your favorite sports team on it. You could put your university on it. And so I, like, collected these, like trading cards, you know. I remember I had somewhere between 6 and 8 credit cards when I was in college. And I would just – you know, put money on them and just pay for stuff and, you know, revolve, you know, just, you know, they send these little checks where you can do balance transfers. So I would just move it from one to another. And, you know, by the time I finished college and close to medical school, I remember I had over $20,000 of credit card debt. And that was, again, I was just paying the minimums. At that point, I had all these little odd jobs in college just to be able to pay the minimums. And I didn't really understand the impact of, you know, the interest. And I just like, was like, as long as I could cover the minimum, you know, as long as I covered the minimums, I thought I'd be fine, you know? And so I carried a good amount of debt, even into medical school with credit card debt. And that was growing and growing. And of course I had, you know, I picked up some student loans and I mean, honestly, luckily for me, I ended up going to my state school. And that's probably, that's one of the biggest kind of, I mean, kind of things I look back in terms of my financial career or life. That really saved me in the end of the day, because honestly, my first year in medical school, it only cost me about $12,000, right?
Oh my word, that's nothing.
Yeah, which is ridiculous, right? It's nothing when you think about it. And of course, over the course of my medical school, actually the tuition doubled. But I mean, that was my first year and that sort of thing. And I know people that are in situations where they, they're paying 60 to 70 per year. So I got lucky, you know, and I took student loans out for that. But again, luckily, it's a small amount of student loans. And so I carried those all throughout, you know, medical school, my credit card debt. I carried it all throughout medical school. Probably it grew and grew. And I got fortunate because after my first year, my intern year of residency, you know, I was actually a year ahead of my wife in residency. And so I took off a year after my internship to kind of line up with her before we came out to California together. And I just moonlighted. And so I moonlighted for a year and I hustled. I mean, I took calls. I worked, you know, 5 days a week, took calls in between, did little odd jobs. And honestly, I was able to pay off all my credit card debt at that point.
Wow.
And
so
you did it really?
That was in residency, you said?
Yeah, right after my internship year. I mean, after your intern year, you know, you have a medical license and you're able to do, honestly, a lot of things within medicine. And so I worked in a clinic, in an occupational health clinic. Again, I was taking call at night for one of the hospitals, at least just covering some of the ER patients. And so I was hustling. I was working hard to really pay off the credit card debt. At that point, it kind of hit me. All right, I probably shouldn't have this much credit card debt. And so I worked really, really hard to kind of get rid of that. You know, I also was able to save up for an engagement ring. And so that year was huge for me.
So was there a moment, you know, where you can remember where you're looking at the credit card bills or something and you're like, this sucks. I'm not doing this anymore. When was that juncture? What do you remember what that moment was like?
Yeah, I think it's actually kind of when I started dating. It started when I started dating my wife, pretty seriously. And somehow we came on the edge, you know, we started talking about credit card debt, or she asked me, or maybe she saw a bill lying around or something like that. And she was shocked, you know. She came from that typical Asian family where you don't have credit card debt. And if you do, you know, put something on credit card, you pay it off immediately, you know. You know, she kind of questioned me, like, why are you carrying this debt? Why don't you just pay it off? And I said, well, no, you just pay off the minimums and you're good, you know. And she was like, no, you pay off. It's otherwise, you accumulate, you know, the interest on it. And, you know, again, to me, that really never hit home. And I didn't realize some people were out there, honestly, just paying off their credit card debt. They put X amount on it, And at the end of the month, they pay it off. And to me, that was like a really foreign concept because myself and a lot of my friends, we just like, credit card debt was a way of life. And I think that's like the American way. And so, she started telling me and started pounding that home, saying, "Look, here's what's happening to you, blah, blah, blah. You're not, gr it's actually growing," and this sort of thing. And somehow it got into my head. I guess I heard it enough. And I took a hold of it. And I guess that was the end of med school. And I said, "Oh my gosh, I got to do something about this." And so, luckily I had the opportunity after internship to do that. And I seized it. And luckily it's one of the smartest things I've done. So.
Wow. Well, thank you for being so vulnerable. I mean, what a great story. And I'm sure there's someone that's out there that's listening to this right now that can relate to going through that. I'm sure that has to be a moment that just changed your life, Pete, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I hope they learn from it. I mean, again, I hope I well, I think people are probably smarter than I was. I mean, again, I don't even know what I was thinking. Again, it's I was signing up credit cards for like the free T-shirt. It's just again, I don't know what I was thinking, and I hope people are smarter than me. But again, it was super. I just know that once I paid all those off, and since that point, to be honest with you, I've always paid off whatever I put on my credit card. I've always paid it off when that bill came the next month. In fact, I've kind of automated that. I've automated it to the point, you can put it on. At that point, we didn't necessarily have all the online pay that we have today.
Yes.
But
Yes.
today, I put it on, pay the balance. I click that button, pay the balance every single month in full. And that's a way for me to keep myself accountable. I make sure I do it. I make sure I have enough money in my checking account. And so to do that, because I know I can easily fall into that same trap again. Once you start paying off the minimum, it's so easy, it builds and it grows. And so from that point on, to be honest, I haven't actually carried a balance since that point.
That's awesome. That is so good. I mean, I think that so many of us, we have to get to that moment like you had with your girlfriend at the time and now your wife, and you just had that eye-opening second. I remember reading a post on the White Coat Investor recently where there was a couple that had everything leveraged up, hundreds of thousands of dollars of credit card debt, and they got to a point where they were just sick of it, and they just made the decision. It sounds like for you, kind of a similar thing happened. Luckily, it was earlier before you start transition to practice, which is huge to have that. So I think the earlier we have these awakenings, the better. Any feedback on that, Pete?
Oh, no, absolutely. Again, I feel like that was a pivotal moment for me. I mean, it taught me a lesson. Again, it could have ended up much worse. Obviously, I could have spiraled even more out of control. I think that's just part of my personality. And I'm lucky I had that gap year. Again, I feel so fortunate to, again, I think, people get brought into your life for a certain reason, and hopefully, in some ways, opposites attract. And the way we handle money was totally opposite in so many ways, and I'm just so lucky. I have my wife, and still she's a huge influence on me today, right, in terms of finances. And again, I run everything by her, so thankfully I have her to do that. And I think for people, again, it's never obviously too late to kind of make a decision. And I think at some point you just have to do it.
Yes.
And mine, again, I don't remember it being super intentional. I remember sitting there going, "Oh, I need to do this." It's just something clicked somewhere, and I don't remember, the exact moment, but something clicked somewhere, and I just started throwing all my money at my debt. And luckily, I was able to pay that all off. So.
Well, I know things can work the other way too, where I'm sure you've had influence on your life. I know in my situation, obviously, I enjoy talking about money. I have a passion for it. My wife is the opposite end of the spectrum. She's the artist in our family, right? So she loves to sing. Money isn't something that she was taught kind of growing up as much. Her parents are great people, but it just wasn't something that was as much of a value. And I know for me, she's brought more spontaneity into my life, right? Normally I'm just cool sitting at home, or working out or whatever, but she brings that
Oh, it's great to have that
spontaneity into
balance.
my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need that balance in your life. So, I mean, that's what I think partners and spouses are for. So.
Absolutely. Well, I did mention in the intro you have this concierge service. So you started this side hustle, curbside real estate, and I know our good friend Nee Darko did a great interview on how you got started. So I don't want to regurgitate all that stuff. So I definitely encourage everyone listen to that interview of how Pete got started and why he named it curbside. But for those of you that aren't familiar with the service, just give us a quick thumbnail sketch. What is this all about, and how did you get started on it?
Right. I mean, he went deep into it. So again, I'll leave it to that. But just in brief, again, when I went to buy my own home, I had a lot of difficulty figuring out the whole process. Nobody teaches us this. You're kind of on your own. I had a difficult time finding a good loan for me. Again, finding a good realtor, figuring all this whole process. And again, you don't really have the time, right? As a busy physician, you're trying to get out in your practice or your residency or whatever. And so it was really born out of my own frustration. I kind of figured out, I mean, again, I learned the process and I started sharing it with a lot of my friends. And next thing you know, they started sharing it with their friends and just started growing organically. And a light bulb went off in my head and I said, look, this needs to be something that's more of a formalized service. And so I put it together. I called it Curbside Real Estate for, my tagline is we're the physician's curbside consult for real estate. And what that ultimately means is that, you know, we're kind of a professional consult or a consulting service for physicians to help them and match them to the right physician loans and ultimately help them match them to the right realtors as well, so they can have a really smooth, easy home buying service. I mean, really, that's our goal. I call it a concierge home buying service for physicians and at no cost. And that's really what my goal has been the whole time. I want them to have this added value, this somebody holding their hand along the whole process, but I didn't want them to pay anything extra for it. And through our company and through our network of realtors and lenders, again, that's where I secure some fee or commission from them to be able to be part of our service. And that's allowed me to monetize this whole thing without actually, you know, asking the physician to pay for anything. And so we've done that. And again, something that's been, we started doing actually this year is we added a social component to it. And I think that's the part that I'm probably the most proud about at this point, where, again, I'm trying to help physicians and that's my passion. But again, I've always had a passion to do some sort of else outside of myself, some sort of greater good. And we've been able to do that and kind of integrate that into our business where for every transaction that we do, or any physician does with one of our network realtors, we're able to provide a child a home who doesn't have one. And so we're in the process and hopefully maybe by the time this podcast is out, our first rescue orphanage will have been built. Exactly. And we're doing this and we're going to keep doing this. I'm really proud of that and I'm really excited by what we've been able to do.
Well, here's what I'm wondering about, right? I mean, you're choosing to do this side hustle and obviously there's a lot of ways you can make money, right? I mean, as a physician, as an anesthesiologist, you could do locums, you could do all kinds of stuff. Where did you find the time to carve out to do this and what's really keeping you going doing it as opposed to being in medicine? Why the interest in this other thing?
Right. I kind of alluded to it a little bit before, but, you know, in college, I kind of always felt like I had a little bit of that entrepreneurial spirit in me that I never really got to fulfill. And so I've always carried that with me. And so when this opportunity presented itself, I just ran with it, you know. It's nice because it kind of blended, you know, I get to work with physicians and I understand the medicine component of it. I understand the lives of these physicians, but I'm also able to kind of blend in and kind of fulfill that, again, that spirit and start something that really provides some value and some service in terms of a company, right? In terms of a, kind of like a startup. And that's something I've always wanted to do. And it's, I think when I wanted to do a side hustle, I didn't want to do anything again, like that was specifically in medicine. I mean, I think it's easier for me in medicine just to exactly stay as an anesthesiologist. I have a very good job. I'm very happy doing what I do, and I love it, right? It actually restricts me from doing anything in medicine outside of my group practice. In fact, it's written into the contract itself. So that actually made it easy, too. So if I'm going to do another side hustle, it kind of has to be something outside of medicine. And so, again, I was interested in real estate. I was interested in real estate investing and these kind of things. So it just is like this luckily fell in my lap, and I just feel it's like the perfect blend, right? It blends medicine, physicians, real estate, and because I'm passionate about it, you know, I do find time for it. You know, it's obviously I'm busy. I have my full-time job. I have a family. I have two children. And so finding time for it is not easy, but it's funny. Like anytime – you ask anybody, everybody's busy, right? But you know, this, if you are passionate about something, you want to do something, you're going to make time for it, and you're going to find yourself becoming a lot more efficient in other aspects of your life. You know, I used to spend a lot of time, get home, you know, I used to sit on the couch, watch a lot of TV and that sort of thing. And I found that kind of time being reduced. Yeah, a lot of time that I did waste. I mean, essentially waste, not doing anything productive. But now, you know, now that I have my family, my job as a physician, this job, curbside, you know, dedicated to curbside, you know, I've really been intentional about how I spend my time. And it's, you know, some ways you actually find more time to do the things you love in a way.
Well, I find for me doing this podcast, for example, I mean, I just enjoy just connecting with people. I mean, you and I would never have a chance to have this conversation if it wasn't for having the podcast. Do you find kind of that connection part being an important thing for you, or am I off base there in terms of what you do?
No, it's awesome. I mean, again, I've connected with a lot of physicians that I would never have connected with. I mean, again, I'm an anesthesiologist, so I work with a lot of anesthesiologists. You know, some surgeons. I do a lot of obstetrics, so I work with a lot of OBGYNs. But outside of that, I don't really talk to a lot of other physicians, right, in different fields. So because of this, I've been connected to physicians, you know, internal medicine, radiology, and all sorts of different type of fields. And so I get to work with a lot of different physicians, which is awesome. So I get connected with, again, there's not, this is one of, like, the biggest moments of people's lives, right, especially physicians. I mean, besides finishing practice, you know, you know, having children, you know, one of the big accomplishments in any physician's life that you want to kind of get to is like, look, I want to buy a home, right, and settle and, and kind of start my life. And so I get to be a part of that. And so it's been really exciting. It's kind of like, it's really fun to be a part of their lives. And it's hopefully something they'll always remember.
Well, that's awesome. I think that there's some good stuff in there for people to think about. And one of the questions that I'm trying to bring up more recently as we do these interviews is, I hear this all the time. There's like this tone of regret in someone's voice. Then maybe even you could describe it as kind of a little bit of longing of, I wish I had this business education. No one ever taught this to me. And I was checking out your website, and you and I were talking, and it might be renovated by the time this podcast comes up. And it's gorgeous. I mean, you've obviously spent some time or had someone build it for you. And I would love for you to talk about some of these business lessons that would be awesome to pass on to other physicians that you're learning that they would never learn if they're just doing clinical medicine. So what does that look like for you, Pete, in terms of some of the business lessons that you're learning that we can pass on to others?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we're lucky with the internet and all the resources that are available to us. I mean, even something like this podcast, right? This may not have been around, you know, 10, 15 years ago. The resources are all out there. And it's just a matter of you looking and being a little aggressive and finding these things. I mean, there's books, there's podcasts, there's amazing blogs out there. So all the information's out there. And I don't think it's, you know, some people have told me, I'm not born with it or I'm not that type of personality. I actually don't think, you know, it's, I mean, there are some people that are technically more natural at being out there and starting businesses, but I think it's just a matter of like a mindset, you know, and I don't think it's anything special that I have or some of these other guys that have come on your podcast necessarily have that's like innately special with them. I think it's more of a mindset. They just decided, look, I'm going to do this. And, you know, as physicians, I think we all have, and I've said this before, we all have the hustle in us. I mean, we wouldn't be where we're at if we didn't have that kind of hustle or that ability to kind of really grind and get there, you know?
The work
and
ethic.
So it's just the work ethic is there. And I think that's what really ultimately makes people successful is that they have the work ethic and they just have the mindset and they go for it, right? And they're persistent. And so I think we all have that in us. So, and the resources are out there. So I think it's just a decision. I really think it's pretty much a decision. And it's something that anybody can do, any physician can do. It's not, you don't have to necessarily do real estate or anything like that. There, whatever your passion might be. I mean, I personally know physicians that are doing all sorts of different stuff as well. You know, anything that kind of follows their passion. I know people that are doing photography, physicians that are doing photography or like, you know, woodwork or something like that. You know what I mean? Which is crazy to me. I know there are physicians that are, you know, that are doing all sorts of different type of businesses where they're, you know, investing in restaurants or starting franchises and that sort of thing. So it's just a matter of what you want to do, and it's all out there, and the opportunities are out there. The cool thing is that as physicians, we always have our day jobs to fall back on, and I think it's very steady, and I think it's busy. So that's your steady job. We can do these all things on the side with without having to take a good amount of risk, in my opinion. I mean, we all have our good stable incomes. I think we're going to be able to provide for our families at the end of the day, no matter what. But we're, you know, it doesn't hurt to try and take a risk. So,
here's a point that really comes up to me, that when we know that obviously a lot of businesses never make it. You look at podcasting or blogs, you know, the vast majority do like podcasts. There's like 4 or 5 episodes and they fall away. You never hear from it again. The average blog probably has 4 or 5. But those that are successful, those that do make it, whether it's photography or a business like this, at some point there gets to be this tension, right, where you have the passion and you have the regular income. And you start to have to make this choice of where am I going to spend my time? So for you doing what you're doing, do you see there being a point or maybe you're already headed there now where I'm going to have to reduce my clinical hours because I'm getting enough income and busyness from my side hustle that it's taking more and more over. That's no longer a side hustle. It's actually a job. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, I honestly think that's a good problem to have, right? If your side hustle is growing to the point where it's providing income and it's competing with the income that you're getting as a physician and it's demanding some more of your time, I think that's a good thing. And so I've gradually started actually reducing my clinical hours, but not until the job started, until this, you know, curbside or some other just, you know, side investments or hustles that I have started actually producing the income. That way, I necessarily wouldn't have to put my family, my family lifestyle and that sort of thing, you know, worry about my wife worrying about whether we're going to be able to put food on the table, that sort of thing at risk, right? I think, again, physicians have that unique opportunity to kind of build their side hustle slowly. And as it grows, and if it demands more time, makes more money, sure, reduce your clinical hours. And ultimately, that's kind of the place I'm trying to go to. I've been able to do it, and I'm continuing to do it. I don't think I'll ever give up, you know, medicine altogether. I just really want the choice. I think that's what it is at the end of the day. I want the choice. If I want to do a little bit more outside of medicine, I can and still feel confident that I can support my family financially. But if I want to do some more medicine, I can do that as well too. And finding that right balance, there is a right balance somewhere in there, and I'm kind of moving towards it. So
in your situation, I think of your wife also being a physician. Is she practicing still at this particular point, or what does that look like in your case?
She does, and she works part-time.
Okay.
She's actually cut her clinical time quite a bit, which is nice.
Okay, good. So now you have a situation where she's helping to raise your young family, but she's still working in medicine. So in a sense, when you have a two-physician household, as in your particular case, I mean, you have some leeway there, right, where you have either lever you can pull down on if
exactly.
You're having more of a passion for some of this other stuff,
right.
which is a blessing. That I know there's an awful lot of two-physician households that I know I work with and a lot of other people have out there. Maybe can you talk about real quick, Pete, in terms of what's the impact been on your family as you found your time being more compressed, you find yourself being more productive doing these other things. Talk about that impact on your family of doing this stuff.
I mean, you have to ask my wife, I think, to get the definitive answer, but I think it's only been good for our family because what's been happening is that, you know, as this side business and this income has started to kind of bear fruit, I've been able to reduce my clinical hours. And a lot of that involves night calls. So, what that's done is that it's allowed me to kind of be at home a little bit more for, you know, for dinner, putting the kids to bed. And also the next day, you know, any doctor listening out there, post-call, you're just like a wreck. You know, your mind isn't in the right place. You're exhausted. You're tired from the night before. You just don't feel right, especially if you've been up the night before. And so kind of reducing my calls at night has really given me, you know, it's given me time and days back to kind of spend with my family. And especially if it's a weekend day, I mean, again, I try not to work on any of these side hustles if I can. Especially when my kid is out of school, I really want to devote that time to my family. And so, honestly, I think it's freed up a lot of time ultimately for me. And my wife sees that I'm happier. I think ultimately I'm and healthier. You know, these night calls can be brutal at times. So I think it's only been good for our family. I mean, it really, it's been amazing.
That's awesome. Well, you alluded to this earlier, and I do want to touch on this because this isn't something that we cover enough, I don't think, in this podcast. And heck, maybe you can come back another time. We can talk more about this. I would love, with your experience giving other people's advice on buying houses, it sounds like rental properties have been part of your investment mix overall.
Oh, it's definitely been. In fact, it's probably, in terms of where I spend my investment, you know, my savings and where, you know, in terms of my portfolio, it's actually pretty weighted very, very heavily in real estate. I mean, I invest in the market as well, too. But again, it's majority, I mean, good portion, probably more than, you know, maybe a typical financial advisor might advise. But I've gone really heavy into real estate.
So what does that look like? You know, like what has been some of your greatest successes and failures? If you could just share with us just a quick couple of minutes on that.
Sure. I mean, again, I've been out of practice about, I'm into my sixth year at this point. I think the goal for me has been to try to pick up a unit or some sort of investment property in terms of averaging out about one per year. That's been about the goal for me, and I kind of set that in my mind. And so it's looked different, you know, from year to year. I mean, I've been very fortunate that, you know, we have a, you know, I have at this point in terms of my portfolio, I have a, you know, a condo that I rent out in a nice, like a professional district. You know, I bought last year, I bought a single family home out of state. And I, with a partner of mine who also happens to be a physician, you know, we bought a small apartment building last year. And it's been an amazing experience. You know, again, we've made mistakes. You know, we're learning this all on the go. We kind of joke that this is like our real life MBA. You know, you learn as you go. Possibly we lost a little money. We spent a little bit more money than we needed to. I mean, there's this whole mess. I can go to some other time with our contractor. We ended up having to fire our first contractor. And, you know, these are things that you can't know about until you actually do it. And so that was a little bit of a mess. But again, it's on the job MBA. At the end of the day, you know, we look back and, you know, now that it's all settled, you know, we're cash flowing. We have a good amount of income coming from that, and it's only growing over time. And I think ultimately for us, we both feel as partners, like, look, this was the best investment we've ever made, actually. And, you know, we hope to do more together. I've also invested in some real estate syndications where, you know, you buy fractional shares of some apartment buildings. You know, anything having to do with real estate, I've actually just tried it because, yeah, I think that's the best way to learn, right? You got to try. I mean, you can read about it all you want, and I've, you know, there's some amazing podcasts and some amazing resources out there online, but you've got to try. Now, again, the biggest failures for us were that, you know, there's just certain, it's just almost impossible to know, you know, how to deal with some of these contractors, vendors, and that sort of thing. But you eventually get better. You just learn on the job. And so, yeah, we made mistakes. We had a lot of silly, stupid mistakes. We probably wasted some money as we've gone. We haven't been the most efficient. You know, we've even had to learn how to work as a partnership, which has been amazing. You know, again, it's not easy, right? But we've had to learn as we go. And honestly, at the end of the day, again, my focus has been on buying properties that cash flow. And so at this point, it's nice. It provides a nice little, you know, side cash flow on the side that allows me to ultimately, again, reduce my clinical hours. And that's what I've been doing.
Well, that's great. And obviously, you've gotten some bumps and bruises along the way, which we're just going to have to do another time because we're running out of time for today.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think that the main thing that I just got out of what you're saying is you're not afraid to fail. And I believe that you really, in many cases, you have to fail to success, which as a physician, that's like the complete opposite of what you've been taught. Right?
Right.
You know, you don't fail your way to healing a person. Can you talk about that a little bit? I'm curious to hear your take on that.
Right. I mean, it's kind of the, there's this old thing in surgery. Again, I'm not a surgeon, but they say measure twice and cut once, right? Where, you know, again, I think physicians are you know, you analyze, and you make sure you have it right, and then you take your step, right? Because, again, the stakes are so high. Right, especially in medicine and in health. And you go by all the evidence base, you go back and you research and you look at all the papers from the past, you know, 15, 20 years on the subject, and you read and read and read before you make a decision, right? Unfortunately, you know, in real estate or in certain other fields, it's not quite that way, you know. There's so many different variables. And the thing is, you can analyze forever. The thing is, sometimes you analyze it to death, and they call it, you know, analysis paralysis at times, where you can analyze and analyze and analyze and analyze, and you never make a decision. And unfortunately, in 5 years, you end up in the same place, you know, where you never bought it, you didn't buy an investment property, or you didn't do it, and now you're looking back 5 years later and saying, man, I've done nothing, you know, for the past 5 years because I'm looking for that perfect opportunity where I have everything just lined up perfectly. Unfortunately, life isn't like that, right? I mean, any part of life, it's not, unfortunately, you can't do it. Even when you choose your spouse or your partner, I mean, it's impossible to know every single little thing until you're in it, right? And so I think you do your best and you find out all the information you can, you do your, you know, and then at some point you just got to make a commitment and go for it, right? And sometimes, you know, again, you learn along the way, you know, and the next time you get better at it. So for me, I've kind of made that decision where, you know, I'm going to make my analysis, I'm going to go for it. There's going to be a lot of unknowns, and that's okay. And so I'm just going to keep moving forward, you know, and luckily, you know, it's worked out so far. I think we've been in a good market for the last 5-6 years. So it's kind of made everybody look like a genius in so many ways, you know, even with the stock market. Yeah. And so who knows when the next correction comes, which people say it may be pretty soon. You know, I might have to come back on this podcast and say, here's all the mistakes I've made. but at this point, it's been good. I mean, there's been some bumps, but overall, it's been an amazing success. And I don't regret it, you know, one bit.
Well, you just sell everything in Southern California and you buy everything in the Midwest, see? So that way
right. You
don't have to worry about the crazy West Coast stuff. That's the answer. All right. Well, Pete, as we wrap up this interview, I'd like you to ponder this question for a second. And I want you just to imagine you're not a practicing physician. You're a resident. So if you could sit down with this younger Pete, the Pete that is working his way out of credit card debt, doing extra shifts, you've had that moment. What advice would you love to sit down and give to younger Pete?
One thing I didn't do enough of, and I kind of wish, is that, you know, we're so focused on the medical aspect of our training. You know, we seek out all our mentors there that are in kind of positions that we want to be medically. But something we don't do is kind of look out for people and physicians that are in a good place we want to be, like in overall life, right? That have that nice balance between having good finances and life. And I know there were a lot of physicians along the way that I remember in my training that seemed to have it all together, right? I mean, they, you know, they were happy at doing, you know, their job as a physician. They seem like they lived a very good lifestyle. They talk about their family. They have good family lifestyles. And, you know, they go on good family trips and they travel and they seem to have it all together. The funny thing is I never approached those people about asking them about what they did to find that balance, you know. You know, what did they do financially? You know, how did they set themselves up financially when they first started, you know, out of training? What did they do? How did they allocate their funds? How did they save? How did they do all these things? I never asked them. They're like the best people to ask. And I regret that because a lot of things is it's almost easier to learn from your, I mean, you know, again, even in medical, like you can just learn from reading, but it's so much easier to learn from these like practice physicians who have been there, done it. You learn from them hands on. And I wish I had done that. And I really wish I, again, sought the advice of mentors, again, not just in the medical field, but in terms of finances and just life, overall life balance. And that's what I would tell myself. If I could go back, I would say, look, you see those people that are successful, that seem successful in your mind, and just approach them and ask them about their lives, you know, and just try to get as much information, the wisdom from them as possible. And that's something I regret not doing. And so that's what I would tell myself.
Do you think the hesitancy could have been of money just being a taboo subject? And I guess my question to you would be, how would you advise yourself to approach these people? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think in terms of like you framed in terms of like, you know, if you framed it like, how, you know, how do you make the most money and why are you driving that nice car and how can I drive that nice car? You know, I think that would probably rub people a little bit the wrong way. But I mean, if somebody asked me that, I would know where they're getting at and I'm okay with it. But I think in terms of more, your focus is more on that balance. You know, if you ask them, how do you balance everything in life, you know, between your taking care of your family, you know, being a physician with the state of medicine that it's in, finding that happiness where you have a good, you know, and able to devote time to your family and these kinds of things. How do you find that balance and how do you kind of prioritize things? And I think money ultimately will be a part of that. I mean, it really will. It has to be. And so you learn that on the backside. So I think if you approach anybody or any physician or attending in that way, I think people are more than willing to share, you know? So I think that should be the focus. Yeah.
Great mentorship there. No, there's so much that we're just going to have you back on again to cover some of, particularly that rental stuff. I'm just fascinated by that. I'd love to have you back on in the future. But for today, Pete, any other closing thoughts you'd like to make folks aware of?
Yeah, I think we've talked about it quite a bit. Maybe we're going to beat it to death. But the biggest thing that, again, and when I talk to my friends and colleagues who do approach me and they have ideas and they have things, but there's this hesitancy because they feel like, oh, I don't have the training. I don't have the business, whatever. I didn't grow up. I didn't take the courses in college. You know, I tell them, look, the opportunities are out there and you see it. And so I tell them, you know, don't be afraid to take risks. I think the bigger risk is just staying in medicine and putting all your eggs in one basket and expecting that to kind of get you to the place where you want to be in life in terms of your balance. You've really put your life in other people's hands, right? So I tell them, look, just don't be afraid to take, you know, take a leap, really pursue those opportunities. And at the end of the day, you'll have no regrets, you know, at least you tried. And, hopefully podcasts like these that you're doing, and you mentioned, Dr. Nidarko's Docs Outside the Box podcast, but hopefully things like that will continue to give people the courage to try to get out there and try these different things. I mean, I'm still learning as I go, and I make mistakes, but again, I don't regret it one bit, and it's been amazing for me, amazing journey.
Well, and for me personally, I think those are great words, and what great lessons. I think, in my opinion, physicians are the smartest and brightest we got when you look out there. And as hard as you guys work to get through medical school, to get through residency, to be an attending physician, your skills are so much more valuable than just medicine, in my opinion. And so whether you own a practice or you do real estate or you have a side hustle like you've had, I really want to encourage everyone that you are the best and brightest. This is stuff that you can do. Any other thoughts, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't want to toot my own horn. I think, you know, people in medicine obviously are, we spend so much time and dedication to kind of train and work hard to get where we're at. Yeah, and they have the opportunities out there for them, and hopefully, here's my ultimate goal. I want people to stay in medicine, but I just want to let you know that saying all these things, I'm not trying to tell people to leave medicine. I'm really trying to hope that they stay in medicine, but they find other additional sources of income so that they can kind of support their lifestyle and find that right balance.
Thanks so much for being with us, Pete. And if people have more questions, how can they get in contact with you?
They can just check out my website or our company website. It's www.curbsiderealestate.com. Again, our focus on that website is to connect people to this network of lenders and agents. But also, again, something that we're continually trying to do is add more resources in terms of education. I think the education is really important for physicians so that they can make a good, informed decision. And so hopefully by the time this podcast comes out, we'll have a fully fleshed out educational site. There is an ebook that I've written that I'm continually always trying to improve. They can also just download that for free. Again, it's all in the name of being informed and making good decisions. So they can contact me there too. There's a form there where you can reach out to me. And again, I answer all emails, phone calls. Happy to do that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Pete. And that wraps up for today. In the next podcast, my friends, I would love to tell your story. And just as Pete has done, and just being so vulnerable and open and honest with us, I know we can learn from your journey too, and it's going to help other doctors. So make sure to contact me, Dave, at drfreedompodcast.com or on my website, www.drfreedompodcast.com. For the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, this is Dave Denniston. And remember, my friends, remember to slash your debt, slash your taxes, live a liberated lifestyle. Also, if you gain some value out of this podcast, I would be ever so eternally grateful if you could take 5 minutes and review it on iTunes or Google Play, because reviews help more and more physicians become aware of this podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Make sure to subscribe. Check in again soon. Have a good one.
All right, my friends. Well, that wraps up the interview for today. I hope you gained some great stuff out of this. I just love learning about physicians and everything that they encounter because I believe we can learn from these experiences. And my friends, you may have heard me talk about over the last couple of months about my friend Amanda Liu who passed away. Well, in dedication to her, I've created a brand new resource, the Physician's Guide to Retiring by 45. So whether you are 35 or 30 or 50 or 55, this document gives you a roadmap inspired by Amanda. And all you have to do to grab your copy is make sure to text Retirement Roadmap to 44222. Again, text Retirement Roadmap to 44222. Thank you again so much for everything that you do. From the bottom of my heart, I believe in you. I believe you have a great financial future ahead of you. Apply these lessons, my friends, that you learn in these podcasts. And don't be afraid to ask for help. And as always, I'd love to know your feedback, your comments. Make sure to email me, Dave at drfreedompodcast.com. And I promise you, I will get back to you within 2 business days whenever you email me. Whatever you got, whatever's on your mind, let me know. I'd love to talk to you, love to help. Signing off for now. Talk to you later.